Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. The pals are Artura.
Hello everyone.
And Gozogoz.
Hi.
And I'm your host, Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about Hakuoki, Demon of the Fleeting Blossom Wild Dance of Kyoto, aka Hakuoki Movie 1 Kyoto Ranbu, a movie from 2013. I chose this one because Idea Factory made it, and their latest game, Neptunia Game Maker R Evolution, just released in the West. It was animated by Studio Dean, the company behind Ranma Half. Ranma 1-2? Anyway, Fate Stay Night, and When They Cry Outbreak, which we covered on this podcast. Hakuoki, Demon of the Fleeting Blossom Wild Dance of Kyoto, currently has a MyAnimalist score of 7.63. This is based on a game by the same name, developed by Idea Factory. It first released on PlayStation 2, PlayStation Portable, Nintendo DS, and 3DS in Japan, before later releasing in other regions. My synopsis is, a girl is looking for her family, but will she find something else? Artura, what's yours?
After not hearing from her father for a year and a half, Chizuru sets off to find him to get answers about her origins. But what starts off as a search quickly becomes a more complex venture, as she finds herself in the midst of a war against a race of demons on the side of the humans.
Gozogoz, what do you have?
After her brother randomly vanishes during their stroll through the woods, Chizuru ends up in a house full of Shinsengumi, where a widowed sportcaster, Danny Tanner, enlists his rock and roll brother-in-law Jesse Katsopolis and madcap childhood best friend Joey Gladstone to help raise his three sons Hijikata, Okita, and Sakamoto Ryoma.
I have no idea what's going on.
I just took description of Full House and added some bits.
All right. Oh, guy. I haven't seen that since it first aired. Okay, so our movie opens in June 1854, and we open on a burning Japanese village which is under, and two young kids are escaping the carnage. And as Gorz just said, one of them goes missing, and we never hear about this kid again.
Hey, now, that was obviously our protagonist.
The one that vanished?
No, not the one that vanished, but the little girl's the protagonist, so you can assume it's like the sibling or something.
Yeah, she goes, brother, where are you? And then she never brings up this brother ever again.
Yeah, but see, the important part is that she had a traumatic upbringing.
Which, again, is never referenced again.
It's to make you more sympathetic to her or something.
Her brother was kidnapped by evil spirits or something. I don't even know. But he just vanishes.
Anyway.
She falls on the ground and goes, brother, did you just fuck off?
She fell over and he got faster.
I need help getting up. I fall and I can't get up. Brother!
We cut to 10 years later, Kyoto, and one of the kids is still running, but now it's from three samurai instead of what we assumed were Westerners. She manages to hide, and her pursuers are killed by zombies with glowing red eyes. As they turn on her, they are killed, and I was prepared to laugh if the newcomers were also killed, like everyone who comes down this alley just is killing the people who are already in the alleyway.
That would have been hilarious.
It would be like SCP, the 155, a Japanese village where people are constantly getting killed by new arriving people.
Just the entire movie, hour and a half, just people getting killed by the new person and then the character being more scarred every time.
The samurai are killed by zombies. The zombies are killed by samurai. The samurai are killed by werewolves. The werewolves are killed
by psycho powers.
then Psycho Power gets killed by Deadpool, and then Deadpool gets killed by Wolverine. I don't even know.
One of the newcomers is named Hajime, and they consider killing the cowering woman, but decide against it, and we get the title. We open back on cicadas making noise, and I swear we need to stop watching anime set in summer.
It's okay. This is definitely a different sound and totally not the same ones.
It was a different sound sample than we usually get for cicadas.
No, it was not. Don't you lie to me. I deal with audio. I edit podcasts. I know when I'm hearing the same sound.
Well, just the thing is that every single sound sample that they ever gather for cicadas sounds exactly the same. Like even if you would open two different audio files taken from two different areas of Japan, like if you would open it in a hex editor, it would be ones and zeros lined up perfectly the same.
The thing is, it's a conspiracy, but there's only one cicada sound, and then everyone and everything uses that. Even other cicadas are using that same sound file.
Yes, cicadas are just carrying portable MP3 players. I don't know why MP3 players. I guess smartphones would have been easier.
Where
nowadays.
Are they going to get smartphones from? They're going to come across MP3 players easily enough. You used to be able to get those in boxes of cereal.
Well, they'll just nick the smartphones from tourists. And
what,
tourists,
you think they were buying cereal? Anyway, a farmer is heading to Kyoto, and presumably his daughter, a young kid named Chizuru, gives him a talisman. We cut to Chizuru, the woman from the alley, funnily enough, now bound and gagged as she wakes from a dream. She's being watched over by Heisuke and Hajime, and one of them goes to fetch Hijikata. Moments later, the room is full of people surrounding Chizuru, and they ungag her.
And you start questioning what kind of anime am I watching?
They're suspicious of why she was looking for someone named Kodo. Turns out it's her father. They're shocked at the revelation, and despite having ascertained that she's looking for Kodo, ask her where Kodo is.
Well, maybe she knows.
This letter says that you're trying to find this person. Where is this person? I don't know.
To be fair, maybe she had that letter after finding... It's like, I wouldn't dispose of the letter just immediately upon finding my father. You know, so maybe that's the real argument. I'm starting to realize we're going to be making a lot of arguments for this anime, huh? We're 6 minutes into the anime by this point, and we've already had to argue about it like 3 times.
Well, it's a good anime.
Hey, deciding, no spoilers!
Deciding to leave a decision of her fate until the next day, they set Heisuke to guard her and all leave. I decided to not write down everyone's names because I immediately lost track of who everyone was, and I'm not sure the deputy commander gets named in the dub for at least the first third of this thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we need you to tell us who leaves the room and who stays in the room. Like it feels
in
important.
Order, please.
And the ranks.
No, I think it's suitable to say at this point that this subbed version of this was just awful. Did either of you watch it subbed?
I had the subtitles on. I didn't watch all. Like I wasn't reading along while they were talking.
Oh my god! There were some things that had typos and like notes. There was a part where they were like, "I don't know if this is like." So they put like quotation marks and then a bracket in full caps describing what they think is happening, which is like, "Thank you." That really clears it up for me as a watcher and reader.
I watched it dubbed. Because I wanted to pick up on all the wonderful Canadian accents.
Heisuke unties her and explains that she's in the Shinsengumi headquarters. She asks what her father's connection to the organization is, but he tells her to sleep. And we cut to the morning, where three of the Shinsengumi are spying on the leaders and Chizuru. I say spying, but they're being super obvious about it.
My first thought was, oh, it's the first girl they saw in their life. They're probably spying on her.
I thought the exact same thing. Like, you can see how anime has corrupted our minds.
Apparently, Kodo's medical clinic burned down the previous summer, and the Shinsengumi hadn't heard anything from him since, though they also didn't find a body. In his recovered possessions, she finds the talisman she gave him as a kid. Or in her dream, you know, one of those. Chizuru is invited to join the Shinsengumi to find her father, or rather, she has to join them, or she'll be killed for seeing the zombies.
Yeah, Hijikata's like, no, tell her the whole story. If she doesn't join us, we'll have to kill her. She has to know.
See, I didn't understand that they were threatening her life at this moment, because I was like, well, they'd already threatened her once, I figured whatever, but I thought that they were telling her, like, you either stay with us or you're going to go out there and die on your own. And, you know, that's so much worse, being like, either you stay with us or we kill you.
Yeah, he's like, she knows too much. She accepts and is told that she'll be treated like a man from now on. And I swear that I heard J.K. Rowling get upset.
No, J.K. Rowling gets upset about the inverse.
Who is J.K. Rowling?
It's just a staff member at Cambridge, obviously.
All I know is, like, stuff about Hijikata and Sakamoto Ryoma. I know those weird English names that you are throwing about.
The thing about them saying she'll be treated like a man is that never happens.
Right? Like, I can't be the only one. I didn't realize. So, if you look at the description of the anime, it says that disguised as a boy, young Chizuru Yukimura leaves her quiet home. But I never felt like she was disguised as a boy. And then they were like, we're going to treat you like a boy from here onward. And then no one treats her like a boy from there onward. So, like, what's the point of this?
I think that some of this, like that description, for instance, has come from the fact that this is an adapt. This is basically a slightly alternate version of the series it's based on, which is based on the game. So they're basically abridging things that happened in the show. So we didn't see her leave home dressed as a boy, but I assume in episodes of the show, that's what she did.
I mean,
wait, like, hold up. There's a show for this? I was unaware of this one.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, same studio.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, go on.
Sorry, I was going to say that, like, the outfit that she wears, I think, would typically be an outfit worn by a male. I don't know I don't remember my Japanese feudal fashion facts exactly, but also maybe they meant like, don't you think that we're gonna send you to the kitchen and ask you for a sandwich?
Based on her clothes, she was called, like, the samurai that was chasing her right at the start did say, where is he? He must be around here somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. That did happen. Yeah.
But that's literally the only time anyone refers to her as a boy.
Yeah, because see, the thing is, I don't think you're right, because when they're talking about, like, what she's going to do, she's like, hey, can I go? Like, spoilers for the future, but she's like, can I go on the expedition? They're like, no. So, what's her role in all of this? She doesn't do anything. They're like, you just stay here and we'll protect you, I guess, instead of killing you.
She cleans, you know, like a man.
Does she? Was she cooking in this?
I don't think she cooked, though, but I do think she cleaned and
served food. She served food? I assume she cooked the food.
I didn't assume she cooked the food, but that's a good point. Maybe I should have. The food just magically appears.
But yeah, maybe they should have elaborated on what will she have to be doing. Cause I mean, you can infer, I guess, how they would be treating her as a man and not as a woman. But I just want to make jokes like, we expect you to go and vote and shit. I know.
Chizuru is assigned to be Hijikata's servant, though he doesn't like it. Later, she's sweeping up when the others prepare to go out, and she begs them. Since Chizuru says that she can fight, she's challenged to show what she can do and immediately fails. However, she did well enough that she's allowed to go out on patrol.
Well, she did challenge the brooding emo guy, so obviously he's amazing at swords.
Do not speak that way about Saito. He is gorgeous.
After a montage, time passes and Chizuru is forbidden from going on the day's patrol. At a briefing, they discuss splitting their forces, with some of them going to Ikeda Inn and others going to Shikoku Inn. Since I played Like a Dragon Ishin, I'd noticed similarities, because they're both based on historical events, and I began to wonder how much Ryuga Gotoku had stolen from this.
Oh no.
I was going to mention that I feel like we were talking about, or we had Shinsengumi either on the anime podcast or the Gengren in general, and I was like, oh yeah, there was Like a Dragon Ishin, which is about Shinsengumi also.
Don't they appear in one of the Way of the Samurai games?
Yes, there's a DLC too.
So the Shinsengumi get around a lot in games, it seems. And they're probably going to be in the new Assassin's Creed game.
Oh, no. Speaking of, totally topical.
Oh, I didn't know that there's a new Assassin's Creed in Japan.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed Shadows. It's just been announced a few days ago.
So I searched Shinsengumi in gaming, and they're in the Rise of the Ronin. They're in a game called Bakumatsu Renka Shinsengumi. Shinsengumi Chronicle. So they get around a lot. And also that's three to the counter of Shinsengumi.
There's Shinsengumi in Gintama. Hijikata is one of the main characters. Much, much more comedic take on Hijikata, though. He dresses up like Goku one time.
That's where Toriyama got the idea from the historical figure, duh.
Obviously, you're the history buff. How did you not know this?
The Shinsengumi deploy, and back at the stronghold, Chizuru gets things explained to her. They're looking for rogue samurai who are trying to burn down Kyoto. A scout arrives and confirms that rogue samurai are at the Akita Inn. Also, Chizuru's father was allegedly spotted near there a few days ago. Chizuru offers to take the information to the Ikeda Inn, that they should wait for Hijikata's forces to back them up, and then we cut back to the Ikeda Inn, where they break in and fighting ensues. This also happens in Like a Dragon Ishin. They move before Hijikata's forces come to back them up.
And that this is the part where we research, and none of it is historically accurate, but all of the research was done by whatever happened in this game.
Chizuru arrives too late, but helps provide first aid. Upstairs, someone with purple hair leaves through a window, and things get a little hectic. I basically had to sum things up rather than describe what's going on. There are fights across multiple scenes and battlefronts, not helped by the police turning up and goading the Shinsengumi. Upstairs, two Shinsengumi fight with superpowered individuals, while at the rear of the inn, another one fights with the purple-haired guy whose name is Shiranui. There's a quote here that sounded weird to me, the dub quote, because it's slightly different from the subtitles, I did notice. And it basically goes, using underhanded tricks makes you a half-assed warrior and a man.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
So using underhanded tricks makes you a man? Being a half-assed warrior makes you a man?
Now we know what Chizuru was doing to pretend to be a man.
You had to become a warrior? Or use underhanded the tactics? I don't know.
The answer to that question is yes, naturally.
Becoming a man sounds really complicated.
Might as well just stay as a woman. In the kitchen.
Shiranui escapes, and Chizuru gets upstairs and manages to save one of those, the two Shinsengumi, from being killed. but she gets cut across her cheek in the process. It heals, and the attacker, whose name is Kazuma, asks why she's siding with humans when she isn't one. But it turns out she didn't know she wasn't a human.
She thought she was a woman.
Oh my god. Hijikata arrives and stops Kazuma from going Super Saiyan Blue, but the dude escapes instead of rather than fighting. Later, they return to the stronghold as the sun rises and some time passes to where they're having a debriefing about the incident. They decide that overall it was a win, and they figure that they should be careful about the three superpowered beings.
I really like this part because, it's like, a lot of people died, but you know what, let's celebrate because technically it was a win. Let's not mourn or anything, just, we won! Yay!
Hijikata takes the deputy commander aside and asks if there are any furies that can walk around during the daytime. I'm guessing that's what the red-eyed zombies were called?
I think so.
The deputy confirms that anything's possible and then talks about the water of life, which is shown to us as a vial of red liquid that he keeps in a drawer.
We sometimes call it Jack Daniels.
Months pass, and some dude visits while some of the underlings bitch about it. Turns out this guy crops up several times, and I did not write his name down because I didn't think he'd factor into anything. And he's only named the one time.
I don't blame you at all. I can try to find his name if you want.
No. I call him Visitor multiple times, so it's fine.
I also did not think he was going to mess to anything.
Listeners will know what I'm talking about, because I've just explained it. More months pass, and the Shinsengumi are talking about expanding their ranks, and thus need to expand their headquarters. The visitor suggests that they take over the temple near the center of the city, and forcefully evict the rogue samurai from inside. The deputy commander leaves when the visitor calls out his bad arm, and Chizuru chases after him, wanting to help. He takes her to see their prisoners, red-eyed victims of her father's research.
And might I add, it seems like several hundred hours pass, because it goes from what seems to be quite early in the day, or kind of dark, into just full-blown nighttime. Just because. And I thought there were, like, for me, it was really confusing, because he was like, come with me, Chizuru, and he grabs her arm and brings her into the room. And then suddenly it's just pitch black, and it's not like the room is pitch black. It's just daytime has gone, and I'd have no idea what transpired throughout those hours.
They had to cook the rice.
Oh, but I figured the rice would already be made.
They cut the little section where they open the world map and get on their chocobos and have to ride.
That makes sense.
Apparently, the water of life keeps the prisoners from being feral and wanting blood, so that's how they're keeping them docile. And since the water of life turns them into zombies, I'm not sure that repeated exposure is a good idea, but I am aware of Resident Evil, and, like, they're not. The deputy then drinks a vial of the water of life in hopes that it will heal his arm. His hair goes white, his arm starts working, and so he attacks Chizuru and complains about her father introducing the Water of Life to the Shinsengumi. So she goes Super Saiyan Blue and knocks him out. The noise draws everyone else, and Hijikata is the first through the door, finding Chizuru mysteriously covered in blood but uninjured, because her powers healed some cuts on her neck again. Leaving two men to guard the new fury, he takes Chizuru away to question her.
He questions whether she's a woman or not.
She explains that she's always had the power, but only her father knows where it comes from. He agrees to keep her secret, but she has to ensure that no one else finds it out.
The fact that she's a woman, of course.
Months pass, and the deputy commander is back to normal, but with a working arm. But they're telling people that he died. Well, I didn't understand that. It plays into one plot point after this.
Well, like they need people to know that if you break your arm, then like you die afterwards.
It really is how it was back in those eras.
Don't break your arm.
Months pass, and we catch up with the superpower people from the Ikeda Inn, and we learn that they are devils. They decide to go and get Chizuru away from the Shinsengumi. And then they don't for months. Like, I think there's two time skips. So elsewhere, at this same time, before the time skip, she and Okita are introduced to Nagumo, who gives Okita a handkerchief to wipe blood from his mouth. I paused and then wrote this. I assumed that he had consumption, which was ye olde timey speaky for tuberculosis. And then I unpaused. And he says, I've got tuberculosis.
Certified doctor.
He read all the medical journals. He knows.
And then later, Nagumo calls it consumption. So I was like, I wrote both notes.
Good job.
He makes a promise not to tell anyone and, quote-unquote, jokes that he should take the water of life.
Oh, yeah, haha, because that's so... It was so not obvious that he really wanted to do it. It's one of those Freudian slips. It's like, oh, yeah, haha, if I took the water of life. Anyway, sorry. That's totally not a joke. That's totally is a joke, I mean.
Months pass, and we're in April 1867, in case anyone's keeping track. I wasn't. And some people are leaving the Shinsengumi.
Here's the thing. In the way I was watching it, I didn't know months were passing. So every time the little note appeared to the side, I didn't really know if it was telling me months are passing or anything. So to me, this could have transpired between a couple of months and a couple of years. And I'm just happy to know it's a couple of months now.
A couple of months. But you remember we started in 1864, right?
Well, to be fair, didn't we start in 1864 when she was a kid?
No, she was running from the people, and then it opens on 1854, and then we cut to 10 years later.
Oh my gosh, okay. Yeah, that's a good point. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, it depends on which subtitle track you were watching with, because I think only one of them out of the three showed that said the actual date when it popped up. The guy I keep calling Visitor, because he was named only once and I didn't write it down, had heard rumours that Deputy Commander had returned to life, and so that's why he was leaving with some men. Months pass, see, two amounts of months passed, and the Shinsengumi headquarters is attacked by devils. You know, you remember all those months ago, they decided they were going to go and get her back. Well, they got around to it, finally. Kazuma goes to fetch Chizuru while the other two fight the Shinsengumi. Deputy Commander appears, and his hair goes white, his eyes red, and he attacks. Back at Chizuru, Kazuma notices that her sword belonged to Kodo, and he tells her that she isn't his daughter, and then hits her in the breadbasket and kidnaps her. Her relationship to Kodo is not further explained after this point.
I really like when you make notes like that, because it makes it very obvious when things are just fully skipped. See, because when I was watching it, I was like, oh, you know, I wonder who her real parents are. And then it never gets mentioned, but I have so few brain cells that I just kind of forget when they don't mention anything else, and I just move on.
During the ensuing fights, it comes out that Chizuru is a devil, and she manages to prevent Kazuma from killing Hijikata. Both Kazuma and Chizuru go Super Saiyan Blue, but Hijikata says no, so the devils leave.
Polite little devils.
Like, no, don't do this. Okay. Oh, why didn't you say that when they burst through the door?
And before, like, 58 people got shot. In the arm, might I add, because I don't think they killed anyone. It was just a display of power. Just wanted to break a bunch of people's arms, I guess. Following, you know, what happened after someone's arm was broken.
Well, that's why it took so many months. They were planning it down to the finest detail to not kill anyone.
Humans should not fraternize with devils. But we also don't want to kill humans.
Except when they do. Time passes and Saito, who had gone off with visitors' forces, comes back, having been undercover the whole time. The others are working on a plan with the Satsuma to assassinate the Shinsengumi's commander. More time passes and the Shinsengumi attack the visitor to kill him. We don't see if they succeed or not because we cut immediately to the Shinsengumi headquarters where a bunch of injured men are brought in and Heisuke is heavily injured. Deputy Director tells everyone to leave the room when it's clear that they can't save him, so he can give the dying man water of life. We cut to him waking, now healed, and Chizuru gives him some food. Months pass. I say this when it tells us that it's a new date, because it's always at least 1 month that's passed. When I say time passes, it means I don't know how long it's been. Months pass and the Shinsengumi are going to war. Elsewhere, Chizuru is fetching water and spots Nagumo spying on her. She takes her to somewhere with a lot of torii gates, and that's where she finds her father, Kudo. Rather than ask where he's been all these years, again, we started in 1864 and it is now December 1867, and she asks if he can reverse the effects of Water of Life, but he cannot. He then reveals that the water was supposed to create new devils because their ranks had been waning, and that she herself was the last daughter of Krypton. The last member of their bloodline.
The last woman they have.
Also fact. Also, she should go with them as the Shinsengumi would turn on her. Also, they're going to disband anyway, so might as well get a head start. Hijikata interrupts before things can get violent. Also, the others. Just, hey, I'm here as well. So Kodo and Nagumo disappear. Later, while Chizuru and Hijikata are talking, the commander is brought back having been shot at a meeting. Because remember, the Satsuma were plotting against him. They clearly didn't remember, but... While people go to investigate the scene of the shooting, Okita, who was bedridden with his illness, decides to take some water of life, and then go for a walk. He goes into town to find the one who shot his boss, and kills the first three people he sees. And then Nagumo approaches him. She admits it's partly her fault that the commander was shot, because she wants everyone who lied to Chizuru to die. They fight, and just as she gets the upper hand, backup arrives, so she runs. Apparently she used a silver bullet to injure Okita, showing that they know how to hurt Furies. I would have assumed that, since Kodo created them, but okay. A month later, war is raging and troop numbers are dwindling. The commander offers the last of the Water of Life to some of the characters with names, though not all of them take it. Later, they eat before a spy tells them that the Emperor's flag is flying in the enemy's ranks. But that means that the Shinsengumi are the rebel samurai now.
I just thought that when he offers the Water of Life to other people, like the ones that don't accept might maybe just worried about the Olympics. They might get disqualified.
They decide to retreat, and Chizuru is sent to ask for support. She's sent with someone, but he's a minor character who is killed by bandits, just so that she will power up.
Because he's a minor character. That's, everyone saw it coming. The moment they introduced him, I was like, wait, who is this? And I was like, oh, I see, cannon fodder.
Wait, he's a minor?
No. He's minor character, not he's a minor. And if he is a minor, then, my gosh, that balding has been really terrible for him.
That voice was not a good idea. He sounded like an old guy.
Like he was smoking all his life.
Not that it matters anyway, because Hijikata appears for some reason and kills the bandits. Kazuma is watching nearby and decides that now he wants to take Chizuru back again. So, starts the fight. Moments later, some randos shoot Hijikata, ending the fight. Kazuma sends them away, and Hijikata drinks some water of life, turning into a fury, and they resume their fight, which is again cut short by one of the other devils, and then the two devils leave. But the Bufuku randos are still there, and they surround Chizuru and Hijikata. The pair run towards the enemy, and we get the credits.
On the next episode of Dragon's Ball S.
I mean, yeah, it's literally, this is movie one. Go ahead and watch movie two. Like, it doesn't have a complete plot line.
What's movie two already out?
The way it works sometimes, we've done one in the past that had multiple movies, and they release a movie and then a few months later the next movie, and I believe they, once all the movies are out, they'll have a theatrical event where they play all of them at once.
But wait, wasn't the movie like a recut version of season one or something like that? And I think it has a different ending. There was a note about that somewhere.
Yeah, it's like a different take on season one, slightly different take on season one. And the next movie is a different, slightly different take on season two. But it had to have a different ending because then otherwise people aren't going to go and watch the second movie. So was this a good adaptation?
Well, I'm gonna say yes.
I played a little bit of the games a long time ago, and it does seem quite accurate with the protagonist being absolutely worthless throughout the entire thing, despite the fact that she's the only person with natural powers beginning the entire thing. So, yeah, I'd say it was a good adaptation. They adapted her uselessness pretty well.
Yeah, it was frustrating whenever like her eyes glow and like you think that her power is gonna be unleashed. It's like no, just
no.
We're just blueballing you. She's not. We're not gonna let her do anything.
She served people those donuts. I mean, rice balls.
She did her job. Jelly ones
are my favorite.
Yeah, from what I remember her not being very useful at all. So, yeah, good adaptation.
The weird thing is that I read, like, on Wikipedia, I read reception, and there was a note there that she, that praised her, like, she has more agency than a typical character from those, but I don't know, maybe it's in the movie three. I mean, it might be in two, but I'm just gonna set myself up for disappointment.
Well, it's based on a visual novel, so yeah, I'd say it sticks pretty well to the story as an adaptation. So was it a Yata, a Nani, or a Baka, Arthur?
For me, this one was definitely a Yanta. I had a lot of fun with it. The animations were really pretty. The story was super interesting. And it got me to want to go play the game and, you know, pursue the characters and just in general enjoy the experience. So for me, that's a big plus.
And Goz?
I want to say, like, personally, I didn't enjoy it a whole lot. I wanted to say Nani. But it feels well written enough and like really well animated. So I feel like I'm on net Yata.
Okay, for me it's a Yata ? There was nothing particularly wrong with it. The action scenes were disappointing because they always ended so suddenly.
That is true.
But the animation was good. The voice acting was fine. I'd like to know what happened to that brother right at the start.
Well, watch the second movie for that.
So does it deserve its my Animalist score of 7.63?
I think it's a pretty good score. I personally go a little higher, but I see why it wouldn't be too much higher because I liked it. but that's just me, and I can tell it's something that is only I'm gonna like, strangely enough. It just feels very, I guess I was shocked, because knowing it's a visual novel and coming into it, I was pleasantly surprised with the fighting scenes, even if they were disappointing with when they were interrupted randomly. But otherwise, yeah, I think it's a good score for it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it was solid.
Yeah, I wouldn't change the score personally either. So, yeah, that about brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining me, Arthur and Gus.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. I know how to become a man now.
Thank you for listening to the Bowels Anime Lounge, and better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, or find us on social media, or listen to the Greencast podcast. Until next time, game on.